ironically, you know, even though people, the cost of attendance has actually gone up geometrically, you know, the capabilities and the skills that people get as a result of those traditional four-year degrees, it's not like those have gone up geometrically.
Welcome to We're Only Human, a podcast focused on blending research and practical advice to help today's HR, talent, and learning leaders improve business outcomes. Let's welcome your host, Ben Eubanks.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to We're Only Human. I am Ben Eubanks, your host, and I'm honored to have you here today. So we are gearing up on our end for the end of 2018. It's been a great year for us at Lighthouse, and we're actually probably planning one more episode to release toward the end of the year, and it's an interesting look at how we're educating the HR professionals of the future. So I talk with a good professor friend of mine about how they are educating people, what sort of ways they do their teaching to make sure it's very practical and not just a bunch of theory, which it's helpful, but not very helpful when you're on the ground trying to get something solved. So this being a really interesting conversation to wrap the year up for us. But today we're actually talking about a different topic. So we recently released a new trends report at Lighthouse. We paired up with a couple of other industry analysts that are looking at this. They're independent as well, so we get that independent viewpoint of things. And the report actually looks at some trends for the coming year, what sort of things are happening, things like that. And we firmly believe that this is the most accurate trends report in the space, in the whole entire human capital industry, because we look at some things beyond just our own viewpoints of the world and our own perspectives, which, while those are important, that's not the only thing we need to be measuring. So we also are including things like venture capital investment trends, where the money's flowing, where the money's going, and how it's probably going to be used in the coming year. We also look at things like user adoption trends. We pull from the world's best survey on that topic, that most comprehensive. We look at how those technologies are being adopted across industries, across company sizes, and how that's actually changing things. We also look at, as well, those perspectives that we get talking to other analysts, talking to providers, talking to practitioners every single day. So we wrap all these things together, really, really insightful. I'll make sure a link to that report is in the show notes so you can check it out in case you're curious, want to know more. And again, we'd love to hear from you. If you have ideas, if you have something that you see on there, like, yes, that resonates, or, hey, you're missing this thing, we think it's important, we'd love to hear from you as well. So ping us on social, ping us on the website, whatever you'd like to do there. But again, that link will be in the show notes. So speaking of turning over into the new year and milestone moments, today's episode is actually a really fun conversation with Mark Onisk. He's the Chief Content Officer at Skillsoft. I talk with Mark about the changing landscape of learning and how that has really ebbed and flowed during Skillsoft's 20 years in business. We also look at what's coming down the line, something that we get questions on pretty frequently. So if you care about how your team learns, if you care about how to have an agile team and organization, if you care about how your business can be competitive, today's episode is for you. Now, on to the show.
Hey, everyone. It's Ben Eubanks, host of We're Only Human. Glad to have you here today. So when you think about learning content, you think Skillsoft, right? It's fair because, really, the company just celebrated its 20th anniversary, which is a big accomplishment, a major milestone for them. And, you know, there are lots of content providers out there, but the depth and the breadth that Skillsoft brings to the table is one of the things that really is contributing to its ongoing success. You know, to commemorate that occasion, and to take the opportunity to talk about what the future might hold, we were actually able to get Mark Onisk, the Chief Content Officer at Skillsoft, to join us for today's conversation. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here.
So for most companies out there, they don't have a Chief Content Officer. So tell us a little about what you do there at Skillsoft, what your job entails.
Yeah, that's a great question. My background is actually in product design, product development. My remit or my responsibility here at Skillsoft is really to oversee, you know, our entire product strategy as it relates to the different learning assets that we bring to market. And so those range everything from our self-study video-based courses that we bring into our collections, to also our digital books and content assets, you know, from leading publishers and our audiobooks. And then that includes both kind of the licensing with our different partner relationships as well as our own internal design and production teams. So that's kind of the broader gamut. And we've actually found that over the years, you know, I've kind of worked in the content space for, you know, the last 15 to 20 years, both at Skillsoft and an organization that preceded it. You know, and it's emerged quite a bit from, you know, what was kind of a straight kind of just learning and design kind of content production, to now it's, you know, very much business relationships, ecosystems, how you can leverage partners and other folks that have specialized content capabilities and really kind of bring those into the broader collection. But it's just at the highest level, that's really what I do, is ultimately work with our design teams and our partners to build products that people want to take and want to consume.
We'll talk more about those pieces of it, I'm sure, in the conversation, because I think that voluntary consumption and looking for ways to improve yourself is going to be part of the conversation for the future, for sure. But so we're always proud when organizations hit a big milestone. As I mentioned in the intro, so Skillsoft just hit 20 years, which is, again, pretty wild to think about that. So looking back over that time, that's a lot of time, but what changes really have you seen to be the biggest in the last 20 years?
Yeah, that's a really interesting topic, and you know, you could have an entire podcast just dedicated to that point. You know, I think in the last 20 years, if we just wind the clock back, 10, 15 years ago, just to get a stable self-study, e-learning platform and program, out to the market and have it be multilingual, that was a big deal. I mean, that took some serious capability, quite a bit of investment. What we've seen over the last, 5 to 6 years is, just tremendous democratization of the enabling technologies. People are able to contribute content, into the digital space, into the internet at a rate faster than it's ever been seen before. I mean, and you look at platforms like YouTube and others, the way that content can get published by just about anybody, it's probably one of the biggest things that we've observed. And so obviously, as we've thought about our product strategy, how do we leverage these enabling technologies to really build, products that are really worthy of people's attention and worthy of their consumption? And so really the being able to curate and manage that content, really promote the things that are important and worth people's time to provide as learning, that has really kind of emerged as a focus. And then obviously you want to focus on high quality experiences. I think, one of the things that you've seen over the past, 2 years is the ability to kind of practice and really do immersive levels and rich levels of engagement online, either through social, through digital, simulations and even virtual practice labs. That really brings a level of high impact, a level of practice that really wasn't seen before. When you turn the clock back, when the company was founded, the digital learning sessions were primarily kind of recorded voiceover lectures, right? That's really what they were, and they had some practice interaction. But fast forward to the learning platforms today. I mean, they're very open. It's all about making sure you have the best possible content that is really focused on, making sure that it addresses a need, it addresses a requirement, and then providing people the ability to collaborate and to practice. Those are all things that are, that the modern digital and internet platforms give you the ability to do. And so, when we think about the future, it really is, how do you leverage that level of richness, that level of practice, to really promote durable skills, things that are really hard, things that provide people kind of durable career opportunities, that allow organizations the ability really to build their people, to really develop their people in a very meaningful way. So that's really, some of the things that we've seen evolve over the past 20 years.
It's funny because when I say 20 years, I'm thinking about all those years ago starting out, and so I'm popping in the VHS. I'm not sure everybody even knows what those things are anymore, right? But popping in VHS, and it's dated, it's completely passive. We know now that learning doesn't happen like that very well, right? It can't be purely passive, and it can't be, even those things, by the time it gets in your hands, it's out of date. And so I think about the value of today's digital content, everything else, it's really timely, right? If there's a change, we can get that updated quickly because it's not published in some ways, on the hard media stored in someone's file cabinet. It's easier to update those things, but it's also, like you mentioned, social, collaborative. We can engage with the actual content, and it becomes an experience versus just this consumption of it. And I think that changes how we learn about it. That changes what we take away from it. And so much of what I've seen in learning change in the last few years has been wrapped around those kinds of pieces of that. Right?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think, when we when we really kind of think about today and then into the future, you know, the ability to adapt and experience, the ability for someone to tell, you know, kind of tell their story, you know, really provide kind of diagnostics and information about their behaviors, their skills, their capabilities, and then have the experience tailor and adapt to that. You know, I really believe that that really is one of the most profound changes that we've seen, you know, over the past, you know, 5 to 6 years. And again, something that we'll see accelerate, you know, that people want things to be intensely personalized and very specific to their own individual needs.
So one of the things you mentioned a minute ago, durable skills. I don't know if you can go into depth on that, but I'm really curious about what you mean by that, if you guys have identified any of those, or if you kind of have anything in mind when you're thinking through the content you're developing, like X, Y, and Z are skills that someone can carry with them through their career, and it's going to continually just build on those things over time. I'm curious if you have any examples of what those might be.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I think when we think about durable or hard skills, we really think about things that, you know, are can be verified, that can be assessed. And again, like you say, they ultimately survive someone's, you know, current tenure in their current role, and that they have the ability to kind of, you know, stay with them throughout their entire, you know, professional journey. You know, and I think when we think about those types of skills, you know, you really think about, you know, things that are like a discipline, things that are you know, very focused, and things that, you know, really help people do something very specific on the job. So I look at, you know, we launched an entire collection earlier this year called Digital Transformation, and really what it is, it's designed around, you know, 7 kind of core digital competencies, and we get into things like the Internet of Things and, you know, even things like digital marketing and you know, big data and so forth. And so that really provides kind of a level of competence, a level of conversance, you know, for an organization, and something that you can at least start to, you know, assess people on in terms of their ability to really kind of understand what digital transformation really means. But what's interesting is that those 7 kind of core competencies that this entire collection were built around can actually then be breadcrumbed into our technology and developer offerings. So to the extent that, you know, someone had gone through our path on design thinking, for example, well, then we have an entire curriculum on, you know, user experience design and maybe front-end web development, you know, full stack development, which is something that kind of translates into it, something that's an actual very hard skill that is very quantifiable. It almost becomes a, you know, kind of the modern embodiment of a trade, right? And again, you know, 50 years ago, people learned how to, learn skilled trades from labor unions and so forth, from apprenticeship programs. And, you know, if you wanted to be a pipe fitter, you were a member of the pipe fitters union, and you were an apprentice, and you were paired with either a journeyman or a master pipe fitter, right? And those are how those kind of hard skills were really transferred. You know, in the old economy, you know, today those same type of hard skills in many cases are digitized, and they can be transformed and transferred in digital means. And you think this concept of master craftsman, you know, versus kind of apprentice, you know, that type of, you know, a method can occur, you know, in the orders of the thousands and millions, right, where you can actually establish networks where, you know, more experienced people can mentor those that are kind of just moving into the you know, kind of the career area of their choice. So, you know, again, we see those types of platforms, you know, and that ability to kind of connect people, you know, being kind of a fundamental element in which we kind of build hard and durable skills that can kind of follow someone through their career.
That's a great example. I can't turn around without hearing about the digital piece of that today, the digital transformation conversation. It seems like every single day I'm talking to someone about that. And so I love that. But also the piece on even the concept of modernizing this, the trade concept, right, of modernizing how someone learns and develops over time. Because, again, like you said, for a long time that was the only way people learned. You know, you were a blacksmith, you were a pipe fitter, you were a, you know, whatever the thing is. You know, I was stretching back there, I think, with blacksmith. But, you know, you learn to do these things by watching someone else, and today you have that opportunity to do that, but in a really scalable way. It's not just, okay, I've got to be within a certain physical proximity in order to learn from Mark, you know, whatever your skilled trade is. I can watch you do this thing because you're really phenomenal at, you know, you're a mechanic, you're really phenomenal at it, and so you're actually posting videos on YouTube or, you know, giving the examples you gave a minute ago where people can create their own content and share those things out because it's totally democratized. You have this opportunity to just, hey, I'm really great at X, and I can tell everyone how to do that because it's just something that I know and something that I'm actually passionate about and that I love. And I think that's another kind of change, too. You mentioned the personalization, the individualization, right? Trying to create those experiences that are tailored to those people and the things that they like, the experiences they enjoy. And I think that's part of it, too, is giving them chances to share the things that they are passionate about as well and giving them a chance to share those things beyond just having that passion and kind of holding on to that and, I don't know, personally liking it, but being able to share that with the people around them, that becomes almost another piece of engaging them in the learning process.
Yeah. I think the key in all of that is making sure that you've got a really solid kind of skills framework and career architecture, you know, that you build these experiences around. I mean, there's a lot of noise in the content space right now, you know, and I almost view it, there's almost kind of two spectrums. You know, you have this concept of, you know, really short burst learning and kind of performance support. And that certainly has a place, right? People have very, very short term, very focused needs and knowledge requirements that they have to get resolved very quickly, right? And so, you know, the concept of kind of 3 to 5 minute, you know, videos to immerse and prepare for a given situation, you know, and really have that situational-based learning, very, very relevant today. And especially, you know, when we live in a world where, you know, people are equipped with their mobile phones, you know, that's really where learning kind of really happens. The ultimate context is the moment of need. You know, I need to know something now. And so you can kind of incrementally build up your skill profile, you know, in kind of these 3 to 5 minute bursts. But I would argue that there's kind of another end of the space too. And I, you know, again, you've kind of hear it, the micro learning versus macro learning. If you know that's kind of some of the one of the prevailing perspectives out there. But I would almost look at it as instead of macro learning, I would call it kind of really durable learning, kind of durable hard skills where people are kind of moving from maybe one skill framework or one profession and trying to move to another profession. You know, the classic example that we have of that in today's digital economy, you know, is where, you know, people may be working in a lower skilled or lesser skilled role, maybe a frontline customer service role, maybe a call center role, you know, customer contact manager, something like that. And they want to get into some type of, you know, coding or software development, you know, role, you know, that can actually kind of build, you know, digital platforms and build products. And so you see this movement where, you know, people are spending $10,000, $15,000 of their own money to get their skills radically transformed over the course of, you know, 15 weeks or 16 weeks, right? And they can come out the other end of that being kind of a functional software developer and become immediately employable. And so I look at that as kind of a validation of another kind of just monumental trend where opportunity is starting to become universally democratized. And I think when you think about the next 20 years, you know, I think there's probably two or three things that I think are really going to happen. And I wrote about this in a recent blog that's available at skillsoft.com. And I think one notion is that the traditional kind of education system that we really know and understand, I think is going to be radically transformed. And by that I mean, you know, certainly we have, you know, you'll have kind of the primary and secondary education, right? You know, kind of K through 12. And even that's going to get digitally transformed, right? It already has, where, you know, students today are getting Chromebooks and iPads, and they're you know, infusing digital experiences and content into their curricula, right? And in some cases, that entire experience is getting totally virtualized, right? And people can do, you know, assess and go through their testing, you know, virtually even in the K through 12 market. But even think after that, you know, you think about how fast and how you know how significantly the cost of a traditional college education is escalating. I mean, just at geometric rates year on year on year, you know, and you kind of get to the point where there's only so much that you know the consumer and the economy can really bear in that cycle, right? Because ironically, you know, even though the cost of attendance has actually gone up geometrically, you know, the capabilities and the skills that people get as a result of those traditional four-year degrees, it's not like those have gone up geometrically, you know, that the value has gone up. So there's this massive gap or massive deficit between, you know, skills, the value of skills that people acquire in that traditional format, you know, vis-a-vis the cost. And, you know, that skills deficit, you know, just it's not sustainable. It cannot continue. Just, you know, markets are eventually efficient. They will, you know, kind of rationalize, you know, so that the skills and the value that are acquired actually may meet, you know, with what the costs are. So I look at that as an area where, and you've already started to see this in kind of the two-year degree or junior college rate, where that's starting to get really radically transformed, where people are starting to go into more, you know, boot camps and even, you know, virtual online boot camps, because they can get basically fundamentally the same level of employability through a much, much more efficient means that costs dramatically less. That will only continue to go up and to extend into other kind of education models. And I actually see employers as playing a critical role in that, where it will become increasingly the expectation that you as the employer will invest in your employees continually, right, and continue to give them hard, durable skills that will survive their tenure. It'll just become a benefit, just like healthcare is, or just like, you know, someone's 401k, you'll be expected to have some type of durable education program. So I mean, I think we're really in for some very interesting times, you know, in the next, you know, next 10 to 20 years and even sooner. I mean, the rate of change will actually go much faster than it did in the, you know, over the first 20 years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, it's funny because one of the research studies I wrote about in my upcoming book, I talked about this study from Gallup. They surveyed chief academic officers at universities and said, how many of your students would you say are prepared for the workplace when they graduate from here? And it was 90-something percent that they are ready to go, ready to hit the ground running. When they asked employers that same question, 10% of employers said, we get people that are ready to start on the job. We have to do so much training, so much development and everything else. They're not hitting the ground ready to go. And so that huge gap is the one you're pointing to, right? And that's without even looking at the financial aspects of it, the markets and everything else. I'm an economist at heart, and I love hearing those pieces of it. That's not even looking at that. That's just looking at purely at the education piece and the skills and the training and everything else that they're not quite getting there. And I get questions about that all the time when I go and speak and teach people, because they're like, hey, how can we get people that are ready to go? And I'm like, you know what? They're not going to get that in school. They're going to get some really specific things. And I don't know that it's ever been like that. You know, no one's ever expected to get everything they need in a college setting, right, in academia, because that goes back to the point we made earlier, you know, having that VHS you pull off the shelf, it's outdated by the time it's published in someone's hands, because the market moves so quickly. And that's why I think things like your digital transformation program that you guys have launched and things like that are going to be so critical for employers to really make sure they're up to speed on the latest changes, the latest developments, everything else, so they're not saying, okay, you know, now we need to decide what's next for us, because if they have a partner there that's saying, hey, we know what's next and we're going to help you get ready for it, that's a different conversation than trying to say, okay, you know, someone here, who's the expert that's going to figure out what's over the next horizon.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned, because you hear this a lot from, you know, prospective employers and those bringing kind of new employees into the workforce, you know, they want people that are air quote ready to go. Right. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that the digital economy reinvents itself so quickly now, because there's almost no barriers to delivery, no barriers to entry. You know, the elapsed time between someone's concept and the thought, an idea that's in their head, the time that becomes a reality and kind of a virtualized or digital experience, is literally a matter of weeks now, if that, or days. You know, people can think up concepts, and we have modern software architectures and delivery platforms that kind of translate those things to reality at a rate we've never seen before. So in an economy that radically reinvents itself as quickly as it does, you know, just there's no other mechanism to basically keep the workforce, you know, up to date and, you know, current on those technologies, other than the employers that are on the front lines, you know, experiencing those economic forces. I mean, you know, I just look at this. This isn't a trend, or this isn't a, you know, some type of paradigm that employers can somehow defer off to. You know, there's an education sector and they'll just give me this pipeline of talent. I mean, I don't think that's realistic for employers to even think that. I mean, they're going to have to invest in continually skilling and making sure that the folks that they have really can participate in the digital economy. They can build on these modern digital platforms. And this is going to impact every industry, right? It's not just purely like, you know, technology-driven organizations or even ones in financial services, which are largely kind of virtual businesses to begin with in many ways. You know, even organizations that obviously have, you know, ship hard goods and you know, operate in supply chains, you know, that's getting, you know, completely digitized and has been digitized for many, many years. That will only happen at an accelerated rate. So I look at it, it's funny, you know, there's, you know, employers that are saying, well, gosh, I need people that are ready, skilled, ready to go to work right out of school. I mean, you'll get maybe the foundational skills and capabilities, but really the continued sustained investment, it really can come from no other place than employers in order to achieve long-term sustained growth, just in my own personal opinion.
Yeah. Well, yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking that it's almost like we need the university settings, that sort of, I don't know, that setting specifically, we need them to teach people how to learn and why they should learn, right? Because it's going to be this competence that they have to carry with them forever. And they need to always be focused on that, always be learning, always be looking for those opportunities to learn. And that might be one of the issues if they haven't heard it in so many words yet, but you know, they need to come here expecting to and willing to and hoping to learn, not thinking, okay, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
So interesting. So one thing that we prioritize here on the show is practical advice. We've talked about some really interesting trends, ideas, insights, all kinds of good stuff that you guys have seen. With that in mind, what kind of advice would you give or insight would you give to today's business leaders? They're thinking about improving their learning, their business outcomes. What sort of advice would you give them, kind of wrapping up and summing up some of the key points today, I think, to help them practically as they're moving forward?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And honestly, that's something that many organizations struggle with, is really kind of aligning and building, you know, out their learning culture, their learning strategy. You know, I think the first thing you really need to do is you're kind of setting and building out, you know, what your learning strategy is going to be about as an organization, is it needs to be anchored in the business objectives of the organization. And you know, if you have a wildly important goal of an organization that you will, you know, want to grow, you know, revenue by 20% and, you know, in inside of the next, you know, 2 to 3 years, well, then presumably your learning strategy and the skills that you're setting for the organization should build to that. You should have, salespeople that really understand the product. They know how to position it in the minds of the buyer. They know how to compare it to the competitors. You should have people that work in product design and product development, you know, skilled on the modern digital platforms, and have the ability to kind of build and support growth for those products. And at the end of the day, you really should have some key tangible measures that are expressed in business terms. And business terms are, you know, it's either customer acquisition, it's new revenue growth, it's, you know, increased units produced. You know, there's some stated measure that you can at least anchor learning to, and you should measure that on a real-time basis. And I say real-time, there's a tendency, we should measure it on a monthly or a quarterly basis, but, you know, the cycle time of the modern economy moves much faster than that. So you really need to think about the real-time instrumentation, you know, of the business, so you can kind of track the adoption and track how learning is influencing that. I see the biggest mistakes that many business leaders say as they make is that they, you know, we want to invest in our culture. We want to, you know, create an air quote culture of learning. And that's a great ambition to have, but it's almost becomes like a wish, right? You know, it's, you know, a goal without a plan is a wish, right? And for someone to say, I want to build a culture, we are going to promote a culture of learning. That's almost like that's an end goal. That's a statement of where you want to be. You know, that's a vision for the future, but it really isn't a plan, right? And usually where I see organizations struggle is if they go out and they set up libraries and they, put up learning portals and they establish communities and they have, maybe they even have mentoring programs and social platforms have been constructed to get, you know, the experts to share their expertise, you know, down to other members. Well, you still need to make sure that's tied to some type of outcome for the business, right? You just can't have all this, you know, social collaboration and interaction, you know, inside of a cohort, right, and hoping that it kind of gets you someplace. So you may have people engaged, but you want them engaged in the right things and actually, you know, moving towards an end goal. So, again, I always look at whenever we're speaking with customers, I always want to start out with, you know, what are the real commercial imperatives that are driving this learning need and what measures have you set up, you know, for yourself? And I think it's really important for learning leaders to be very visible with the business stakeholders that they serve, right? And you will really want to make sure that, you know, that there's a very highly visible report card, that there's open and transparent measures, that, you know, your business stakeholders are in line with where you're taking the learning strategy. Because otherwise what happens is that, you know, the learning function, you know, then gets kind of could fall victim being perceived as like, okay, this is just an overhead. We just kind of got to do this. This is a mandatory thing. They don't view it as compulsory. But all that said, you know, I do see this notion and the concept of kind of durable learning and highly skilled learning starting to move into the actual, you know, the actual domain of the line of business, where you have, you know, business leaders that are now thinking about what's their skill development plan, what's their learning strategy. And even in that dynamic, you know, the traditional L&D function still has an important role to play because you're kind of the internal consultancy to the business, right? You have the ability to then, you know, make sure that there's a common set of standards that these roll up to the ultimate business objectives and the business, you know, the vision and the goal of the company. And more importantly, you can look for opportunities and synergies and, you know, make sure that there's not kind of a wasted learning resource and wasted effort where you may have individual departments pursuing one learning strategy that's not in support of the broader organization strategy, or they may have be engaged in some type of redundant investment activity that otherwise the L&D group may already be funding. And it's funny, you find that in a lot of organizations where, you know, you'll have multiple solutions in place, you know, for multiple organizations. And, you know, this concept, you know, of kind of the shadow learning that exists, while, you know, it's for all the right reasons and it's very well intended. In many ways, it's helping, it may be helping, you know, people exceed or succeed in certain ways. There's an opportunity for, you know, the learning function, you know, partnered with even the financial part of the organization to look for ways in which that can be refined. And that's how you basically get to really effective learning strategies, by engaging those stakeholders and setting up, you know, kind of transparent measures.
Goodness gracious. There's so much in that short little segment. I don't want to tap into all of it, but I was going to say that really echoes some of the things that we've seen in our research, that high-performing companies are much more likely to have a learning strategy before they start developing and deploying content. They don't decide after they've already got it out there, like, okay, what's our strategy now? No, they're thinking from the very beginning. And in addition to that, they're actually doing a lot on the measurement piece. They're trying to understand, is it impacting? How is it impacting? To what degree is it impacting? So they can refine and continually, you know, reinforce the right things as they're going through that. So really completely echo and give you a, you know, the virtual high five on all of those pieces there, because I think that's really, really critical. Great advice for the employers out there. Mark, this has been so much fun for me. How can someone learn more about Skillsoft and the great work the team is doing? I know you mentioned a blog post a minute ago. I'll make sure and get that into the show notes so that people can check that blog post out about kind of hearing some of your thoughts about the past and the future of learning. But is there anything else you'd like to say there?
Yeah, we will generally, you know, post all of our findings and all of our updates out to the blog space, which is accessible through the Skillsoft website. So if you just go to skillsoft.com, in the upper right-hand corner, there's a link to the blog space. You just click on that, and that will go to, you know, basically real-time updates from myself and many of the other product leaders and product owners here at Skillsoft. So it's a great way to kind of keep up with where our heads are at, what we're seeing in the market, and also a place where we kind of publish research, you know, with MIT and other institutions that we work with, you know, on different learning science. So it's a great resource. It's open and freely available. So, you know, we encourage people to stop by and visit and feel free to reach out.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Mark. Thank you for joining us on the show. This has been really a pleasure for me.
My pleasure, Ben. Always looking forward to it.
Awesome. To everyone else, this has been We're Only Human. I've been Eubanks, your host, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to We're Only Human. Please take a moment to share this episode with another HR leader who might see it as a valuable resource in their daily work. For more information about the podcast and to see all our show archives, please visit upstarthr.com.